Namanatira Vanachari Stotra Sat Sri Shimani Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anant Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mayi Ki Jai Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Pranamandi All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Skanda 6, chapter 17, verse 8. Prasha Prakritas Chapi Striyam Rahasi Vibrati Ayam Maha Vrata Dharo Vibhati Sudasi Striyam Prayasya Prakritaschapi Striyam Rahasi Vibhati Ayam Maha Vrata Dharo Vibhati sadasi striyam Prayasa prakritas chapi Striyam rahasi vibhati Ayam mahavata daro Vibhati sadasi striyam Prayasya prakritas chapi Striyam rahasi bibrati Ayam mahavata daro Vibhati sadasi striyam
Prayasya prakritas chapi
Prayasha, generally, Prakrita, conditioned souls, Cha, also, Papi, although, Striyam, a woman, Prahasi, in a solitary place, Vibhati, embrace.
Embrace.
I am this Lord Shiva. Mahavratadhara, the master of great vows and austerities. Vibharti enjoys. Sudasi, in an assembly of great saintly persons. Striyam, his wife. Translation. Ordinary conditioned persons generally embrace their wives and enjoy their company in solitary places. How wonderful it is that Lord Mahadev, although a great master of austerity, is embracing his wife openly in the midst of an assembly of great saints. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The word Mahavratadhara indicates a brahmachari who has never fallen down. Lord Shiva is counted amongst the best of yogis, yet he embraced his wife in the midst of great saintly persons. Chittaketu appreciated how great Lord Shiva was to be unaffected even in that situation. Therefore, Chittaketu was not an offender. He merely expressed his wonder. Translation again. Ordinary conditioned persons generally embrace their wives and enjoy their company in solitary places. How wonderful it is that Lord Mahadev, a great master of austerity, is embracing his wife openly in the midst of an assembly of great saints. Om Ganatira Mundasya Ganajana Shalakara Chaksuram Vitamina Tasma Shri Bhavinama. Srila Prabhupada qualifies the statement of Chittaketu, expressing his wonder at Lord Shiva in a very awkward situation, actually. He's instructing an assembly of great saintly persons, sitting in their midst with his wife on his lap. And then here comes Chittaketu in his airplane, in which he was traveling like a leader of a ladies' Sankirtan party. He was leading these Vidyadharas and Vidyadharis in traveling Sankirtan party, actually. So here's Lord Shiva in a very awkward situation, teaching great sages spiritual topics with his wife on his lap in an airplane. A Vidyadhari girl led by Chittaketu arrives unexpectedly, and Chittaketu expresses his wonder, how wonderful it is that Lord Shiva, in this situation, you could call it a predicament from any ordinary person's perspective, and he's unaffected. And that fact that he was unaffected was testified as the pastime unfolds. Parvati was very upset because she was implicated in what she perceived as a criticism. That was her perception. Some people tend to take things very personally, very subjectively. But as aspiring servants of the servants, we have to learn to become more objective. Understanding there's more to any situation than one side or two sides or three sides or three dimensions, because there is an absolute perspective which we're striving to achieve And the master of that absolute realm is the Lord we're trying to satisfy by our behavior. So Lord Shiva remained very grave and objective. And he actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains, that he actually wanted to exchange what he perceived and was actually correct in his perception. This was a loving exchange between friends. And he wanted to reciprocate with that exchange by saying how wonderful it is that the person who's exclaiming how wonderful it is that I have my wife in my lap is leading all these Vidyadhari girls traveling around the universe in an airplane. The former king with 10 million wives who's exclaiming how wonderful it is that I have my wife with me in this situation. He wanted to reciprocate like that. It was a loving exchange of a jovial manner between friends, or it would have been, if not had Parvati been very reactive in defending her position, which you might consider would be somewhat of a subjective or conditioned response. And she cursed Chitraketu to become a demon because of his very crude behavior. And then when he bowed down at her feet and said, "Let whatever you say become manifest," everyone was astonished at his humility. Of course, this whole story opens with the question of Maharaj Pariksit to Shukadeva Goswami regarding the previous chapter where, or a few chapters previous, when Indra was fighting with Vritishura. And Maharaj Pariksit was astonished that this is not like the typical battle between good and evil, because Vritishura, in the form of a demon, with the body of a demon, was actually acting as Indra's guru, imparting to him lessons of such deep wisdom, backed and integrated with such a precious example, that Vritishura was encouraging Indra, fight to the end. Because Indra is actually scared by the prowess of this Vritishura, who is actually a devotee at heart. And Vritishura was encouraging Indra, fight with me. And Vritishura himself was fighting valiantly, although the outcome of the battle was already foretold. He was going to lose. He was going to lose his life. So not only was the lessons he was using to inspire Indra of such deep wisdom that they inspired Maharaj Pariksit to question who was this Vritishura, but his example was so precious that he would stick to his duty, even though it was doomed to failure on a material, practical level. But on the spiritual level, you see how Krishna rewards his devotees when they behave properly in awkward circumstances in which all devotees are placed by the mercy of Krishna. Lord Brahma, the founder Acharya of our sampradaya, was placed in a very awkward situation when he was watching Krishna's pastimes from the sky. And the demigods were in a very awkward situation because Agasura was such a huge snake, proper form for a serpent-like demon to take. This huge python, who, when he opened his mouth, his upper lips were in the sky, in the clouds. And the demigods, you know, were hiding behind the clouds so that they wouldn't be seen by him. But they couldn't help but peek out and see what's Krishna up to. So Brahma was watching. Simultaneously hiding from the view of Agashara and watching to see what's Krishna going to do next, because it was very wonderful what was transpiring in Vrindavan. And of course, to some degree, this will be manifest in the lives of all aspiring Vaishnavas. You'll be put in awkward situations, in difficult situations, in impossible situations. And the longer you stay in Krishna consciousness, the more impossible it becomes. Of course, we don't preach this in the beginning. We say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But then when you become a little bit addicted to the taste of prasadam and the sweetness of the holy name, you find out that Krishna challenges us because he wants us to be strong and to overcome the obstacles we have placed by our own conditioning and selfish desires between ourselves and his loving service. So there comes a time, or at least there will come sometimes, when the obstacles and the difficulties he places before us are just plain impossible. We're not supposed to use that word frequently. Prabhupada said you should use that word in the closet. Didn't say you can't use it. He said you have to be very... You can't use it too generously. But there are situations that from a three-dimensional perspective are just plain impossible. But devotees become more and more enlivened the more they face impossible obstacles, because the more they are sure, or the more they have faith, that we're going to see Krishna's wonder and his mercy and his empowerment more as the challenges and calamities increase. So Brahma was watching. He wanted to see how Krishna dealt with Agashura, who had all the demigods so terrorized and intimidated. And then when Krishna delivered him in his wonderful, unique, but typical, wonderful way. And then Brahma was watching how Krishna afterwards is just doing whatever he would do as soon as they killed the big demon. You know, in this world, after traumatizing events like 9/11, you know, for years, people are so, they can't really behave normally. They're so traumatized by situations of years or even lifetimes past that they can't even behave normally. So after killing Agashura, delivering him, Krishna was just nonchalantly having a picnic, which is what he would always do after they killed the demon, because actually that was the deeper significance of the appearance of the demons. The cowherd boys had this problem, which Bhaktivinayakar continually repeats this problem. I can't remember the Bengali, but the translation is too much fun. Any Bengalis told me the translation of Bengali for too much fun. And the only thing you can do when you're having too much fun, and what was it that they were doing? They were becoming immersed in Krishna Leela and then going back to Chaitanya Leela and then coming to the present and just bouncing back and forth like that. It's a term especially used in connection with Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, and Shyamananda Pandit, who were touring Braj in the company of Raghava Goswami. And they were just immersing themselves so deeply in the Leelas, both Krishna Leela, both Chaitanya Leela, and the present, their Leela, that they were actually entering into the pastimes. And they had this continuous, repeated problem of having too much fun, and then something would come and bring them back to the present, whatever that means. So the same with the cowherd boys and Krishna. They would be playing ball. You know, they had these fruits they would use for playing ball and having so much fun, they would forget to eat lunch. But that would be very disturbing to Mother Jashoda. So by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, right around lunchtime, some big demon would come and terrorize everybody so that they would realize that Krishna is their only shelter, because they were thinking he's our best friend, most loving paramour, sweetest playmate, best child. But then when the calamities comes, he's our only shelter, obviously. Then he would kill the demon and nonchalantly have a picnic. And Brahma was watching the picnic lila, how Krishna was like the whirl of a lotus, and all surrounded by his eight most intimate gopas, who were surrounded by their eight most intimate gopas, and unlimited. This lotus was expanding into unlimited petals of gopas in their entourage, and each and every gopa was experiencing that Krishna is looking just at me, and he's speaking, and he's joking just with me. We have unlimited gopas all experiencing the same sensation. This is Krishna. The crux of loving relationships, the root of all love. And then when Brahma saw that the cowherd boys were taking prasad off each other's plates, and they were giving their prasad to other gopas, and Krishna was giving his lunch to his friends, and he was taking from their plates to sample for himself. And he was commenting that, you know, you're just sons of cowherd men, but I'm the son of a king, the king of the cowherd men, so I have very opulent lunch, and you have simple lunch, so you take mine and I'll take yours. And he was watching this loving exchange. And he was thinking that to kill the demons like Agasura and all the others, this must be my father Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But my father Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, would not eat remnants of cowherd boys. So who is this? It wasn't that he was offensive. He just wanted to know, is this some feature of my father Narayan who I have not yet come to know? If so, he just wanted to glorify him more. But to find out, his intuition was to use his mystic potency to steal away and hide the cows, calves, and cowherd boys, which he did. And then when he looked back after a moment, you know the story. And then when he saw that his own mystic power was mystified by a higher Yogeshwar, he came and surrendered to Krishna and offered the most beautiful prayers, very instructive prayers. He said that the scientists may someday be able to count all the atoms in creation, or all the stars in the sky, or all the particles of sand in all the beaches in all the worlds, but they will never be able to calculate the unlimited qualities and wonders of Sri Krishna. And then he said, "There, you know, some say they know something about Krishna. Let them say what they know or think what they want. But as far as I'm concerned, his wonders are far beyond the comprehension of mortal beings, including himself, Brahma." But most significantly, he said that those who patiently accept the miseries caused by their previous misdeeds, or even Krishna's arrangement, all the time offering their obeisances with gratitude to the Lord and singing his praises, are most certainly eligible for liberation because it is their rightful claim. So what Brahma is saying is that when either the reactions to our past karma come to us, or it may appear to be like karma, but it may be Krishna's special mercy to have us insulted or criticized or misunderstood. And when you see it, this is a gift. It is a gift of potential humility for me. But if I react in a defensive way, what do you mean, criticizing me for sitting with my wife in my lap or any such thing, defending your own ego, false ego, then you perpetuate the chain of karma. But if you accept it as an opportunity to nullify that chain, that unlimited chain since time immemorial of action and reaction, which is self-perpetuating as much as we react in an egoistic way, in a selfish manner. And you just see it as Krishna's mercy and respond with gratitude. This is another opportunity to overcome an obstacle that my conditioning has placed between me and the loving service of the Lord. Then your response will be with gratitude. You have a duty to truth, that if someone is propounding a lie, you can correct the statement. But your other duty, equal duty, is to humility, that you don't do it in a reactive, egoistic way, because that perpetuates the karma that we're trying to unwind. When Buddha was traveling with his entourage, and one very arrogant, challenging, critical man joined, and for several days on end was just repeatedly, continuously criticizing Buddha for everything. And at the end of the third day, expressed his astonishment that all I've done is to criticize you endlessly, and you don't react. You just continue to show kindness and compassion upon me. What is the reason? And Buddha said, if someone offers you a gift and you don't accept, to who does it belong? Meaning, you've come here to give me all your garbage, but I don't want it, I don't accept it. Not that we want it to stay with the person who delivers it either, we want it to be done with. And that fine example of compassion has unlimited ability to melt away deepest layers of conditioning, right? Because it's the nature of Krishna. Or Jesus, when walking with the apostles, passed a blind man, and the apostles asked, who performed the sin that made this man blind? Was it he or his parents? And Jesus, as typical, and we see this in the Leela of Srila Prabhupada also, would not always answer the question, but would answer the issue in the heart. So Jesus said, he was born blind so the mercy and wonder of God could be revealed in his life. So what he was answering was an attitude in the apostles who had been conditioned, like many of us, to think that sin is something that makes you so shameful that you just cloak yourself in shame until the punishment day. It's not denying that we were sinful, but repentance can also become a crippling, disempowering indulgence. So yes, we acknowledge we're sinful. It's the nature of conditioned existence. But the other aspect is the glory of God, which is more important and is very empowering to acknowledge, to make ourselves appropriate recipients of the mercy of God, which can just eradicate more the holy name. One utterance of the holy name can eradicate more sinful reactions than what depth of sin one is able to indulge in. That was... Anyway... After the whole pastime with, you know, Brahma stealing the cows, calves and cowherd boys, and seeing a superior display of mystic potency by which he understood this is some glorious aspect of my father Narayan, and Lord Brahma came and offered his very eloquent, very instructive prayers, it just always amazed me. Krishna didn't even answer. He did not respond with one word to Brahma's eloquent, very beautiful, penetrating and deeply inspiring prayers. Krishna did not say one word to him. When Brahma asked if he could go back to his loka, Krishna didn't even answer him. He didn't even answer his question. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said he gave permission by silence. So Brahma went back to Brahma loka. And he felt so deeply disturbed by the whole affair. It plagued his heart so deeply that when Jiva Goswami was touring Navadvip Dham with Lord Nityananda, and they came to Antardvip just after taking lunch at Mother Sachi's house. Jiva Goswami asked, what is the Antar? Antar means secret. What's the secret for which Antardvip, the island upon which Mayapur lies, got its name? And Lord Nityananda continued the pastime that after Brahma was so tormented by what he perceived as an offense, which it really wasn't. Offense means there has to be some ill motive in your heart. It's not just a mistake. You know, we all make mistakes. You know, if you... some, you know, breach of social etiquette accidentally, which is inevitable. You know, you say you're sorry and that's the end of it. It doesn't mean there's some deep, necessarily, operate in your heart. That's what offense means. Some ill motive in your heart. With Brahma, he was just trying to understand. But anyway, Lord Nityananda explained the secret, that Brahma was not satisfied after Krishna's silence and granting consent by silence that he go back to his abode. So he understood, Brahma, that Krishna is going to again appear. So he came to Antardvip, the central stamen of the lotus of Navadvip, and performed severe tapasya. And after a long time, had the darshan of Lord Gauranga. And looking up upon that most magnanimous, beautiful, compassionate Lord, he fell down with his head on the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, crying, I'm a lowly, worthless, wretched fool controlled by pride. And therefore I could not understand the nature of your loving pastimes. And I committed an offense. And I fear that when your Leela resumes as the golden avatar, I'll do the same. The first 100 trillion years of my life has just been wasted due to ignorance of your glories and my relationship with you. What will I do for the next 100 trillion years of my life? Will it be wasted in a similar manner? I, Lord Shiva, Vayu, Indra, we're all your subjugated servants, but we're not so fortunate as the Brijabasis, your intimate devotees, to whom you yourself become so deluded by their love that you forget your supreme identity. So what will protect me? What will fulfill my desire to enter into your loving service? And Lord Chaitanya replied that before my lila is manifest on earth, you will take birth in the Malecha family. Implying that he would be rejected both by the Islamic world and the Hindu world because of being born in a Muslim family, but taking to the ways of the Hindus, the Vaishnava ways, which was seen as Hindu. So he's a reject to both cultures. But, Lord Gauranga said, you will be famous for your humility and your chanting of 300,000 names a day. During your life, you will be integral to my pastimes. And when you are quitting that body, you will be seeing me face to face. So now act as my disciple and serve me in the future eternally as Namacharya Haridas Thakur. And Lord Gauranga disappeared. And Haridas Thakur is the perfect, the most precious example that the Muslims conspired with the Brahmins to have him arrested. by the Kazi, the administrator, the religious administrator who brought his case to the governor. And after the brief episode of putting him in jail, in which all the prisoners were climbing the bars to just get a glimpse of his form, a brief darshan. And then when he saw that in jail all eyes were fixed on him and everyone was yearning for a benediction, he blessed them, saying, "May you stay forever in your present condition." And their hearts just dropped because they really wanted to get out of jail. And he told them, "Stay forever in this condition." And then they became very morose and said, "No, you didn't understand my benediction, which never goes in vain. I meant that right now, your hearts are clean and pure, and there is no malice anywhere in your consciousness. That is the condition I bless you to stay in forever. If you get out of jail and you again take to malicious ways, that will undo everything. So accept Krishna's mercy to keep you in the present state of enlightenment." And then understanding, they were very relieved and grateful. And then in the courtroom, when Haridas Thakur entered the courtroom, everyone was so inspired by his grace, his demeanor, his countenance, which was so radiant with love and compassion, that they all spontaneously stood in respect, except for the Kazi, who had no trace of mercy in his heart. See, the problem with conflict between different religions is the two aspects of religion. There's the generic, which all religions share in common, that there's one God and we're all servants and to surrender to Him. The specific differences in religion regards the rituals. And in Kali Yuga, under the fostering care of Kali, people tend to focus more on the superficial differences in ritual and be judgmental and think that whatever it is about them, including me, must be the best, including my religion. Therefore, everybody else is inferior and worse and needs to be rejected. So, Haridas Thakur explained that there's only one God whom the Quran and the Puranas both glorify. All the difference and all the conflicts arise between superficial differences between rituals. But if instead of that we would focus on the underlying similarities, then the spirit of brotherhood would naturally awaken in our hearts. And he gave such an eloquent sermon in the courtroom that everyone actually felt their hearts surrender to him except the Kazi. And the governor pleaded, it is by some inconceivable great fortune that you've taken birth in the Mlecha race, but you've committed such a sin by identifying with the Hindus who are so inferior. And the only redemption for such an offense is to take shelter of the Quran and express your faith, take reinitiation into our glorious culture. He was sincerely pleading with Haridas. But Haridas couldn't help. He just burst into laughter. Just see the deluding energy of the Lord that makes people think in such ways. He said, The affairs between any individual and this Lord is his business. You can't control it or delegate it. So I'm doing as Krishna inspires me from within. I can't change that to suit your whims." I'm paraphrasing, of course. But the Kazi was relentless. His sin is so grievous, and he will lead others on the path of ruination by his example. So the atonement was a humiliating public execution. in the marketplace. But he said, do you know the consequences? He said, let my body be hacked into pieces. Let me be beaten till life forsakes me, but I cannot give up the chanting of the holy name of Krishna in any circumstance. So they proceeded to attempt to mutilate him in the first marketplace, in the second, in all 22. And they found to their astonishment that he was not revealing any sense of pain. And this was the whole team of Muslim executioners performing this act. He was not feeling any pain. And they were astonished that he was oftentimes laughing and smiling, other times feeling sorrow at the reaction that his tormentors would have to face. But there was no wounds and no pain visible in his body or mind. Remember his previous words as Brahma. When, for those who patiently, earnestly accept and tolerate the reactions to their previous karmas, while all the time with their body, mind, words, and heart offering obeisances with loving gratitude to the Lord, they are eligible for liberation. He personified this verse so perfectly. And then when he saw their grief that his surviving the so-called execution would be their death, they would be executed if they did not succeed in executing him. He said, well, if my living causes pain to others, I can forfeit it right now. And he just contemplated those lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, which he had previously seen in his darshan, and fell down lifeless in a state of samadhi. They thought he died. They took him back to the governor, said, let him have a proper funeral. But the Qazi said, no, because if he has a proper funeral, he'll take birth again in the Hindu family and continue this mischief. Cast him in the river so his soul wanders endlessly without shelter. This is the only atonement for one of a sin of his caliber. So they tried to throw him in the river. His body would not budge. And then he sat up in ecstasy and shocked everybody because he was supposed to be dead. And they pushed and shoved from all directions, all the Muslims, they couldn't budge him an inch. Because Vishvambhar, the sustainer of all the universes, had entered into his heart. But Ganga Devi also wanted to serve him and wash his lotus feet and carry him back home to Fulia. So Lord Gauranga released that energy. They cast him in the Ganges. Came down to Fulia and came out preaching and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, to the great joy of all his previous associates. But later at the Mahaprakash, when Lord Gauranga was revealing to each and every, to all the devotees, that he is totally aware of all our ordeals. He understands us. See, everybody wants to be understood. Parvati wanted to be understood. But Saint Francis says it is more important to understand than to be understood. That's the other part of the equation. So Lord Gauranga wanted to make it clear to all the devotees that he understood their ordeals and what they had gone through for the sake of serving him. And when it came to Haridas Thakur, he said, when those Muslim executioners tried to execute you in the most disgraceful manner, I could not bear what they were attempting to do to you. So I appeared with Sudarshan Chakra in my hand, ready to sever their heads. But we heard you praying for their deliverance. So Sudarshan Chakra refused to leave my hand, and I couldn't do anything except to stand over you and take that beating upon my own back. And Lord Gauranga turned around in the assembly of devotees and demigods who had come to witness the Mahaprakasha saw the whip marks and club marks and bloody marks on his back. And Haridas Thakur just fell down crying. And revealing so many wonderful pastimes. Beginning with Prahlad, then going through Draupadi, how she was, just imagine, Draupadi, a goddess, born from the sacrificial fire, dragged by the hair to the royal assembly, which is supposed to be a place of very cultured gentlemen, at the worst time in a month, when the Mataji stays in seclusion in those days, doesn't even come out in public. She was dragged into the royal assembly and insulted in such a attempted to be insulted. And she never really got over it for a long time. She kept trying to incite Bhima to retaliate, and Bhima was pretty well inclined. But Maharaj Yudhisthira just, he wouldn't react. And she got really upset with him. She didn't think he was really a man because he just wouldn't react the way Bhima would. But what Maharaj Yudhisthira kept patiently reiterating is that Krishna places us into various types of assemblies to work out our karmas. He may place you in the assemblies of the people that you just most of all can't get along with. And if you try to change your situation and find the same situation with the same people with different names, wherever you go, it'll be there. Waiting. Because it's the lesson, it's not the people, it's not the issues, it's the lessons that we need to learn. And when you understand that this is Krishna's arranging lessons to empower us to overcome the obstacles which we have placed between ourselves and Him, then you can respond, as Lord Brahma says, with gratitude and appreciation. In your words, your body, your mind, and your heart. But this is an opportunity to come closer to Krishna. So when someone insults you, when someone misunderstands you, or criticizes you, you have a duty to truth, that if it's a lie, you can say, well, you know, you didn't get your information right. But humility is your other duty. You know, the ego just wants to react. What? Who are you with your former 10 million wives, and then you got divorced, and you got all these Vidyadhari girls, and you called a Sankirtan party. But Lord Shiva was quiet. He was silent. He wanted to say something in loving exchange with Chittaketu, but he was silent because he knew that Parvati was already reacting. If he reacted, even in a loving way, she'd get more reactive. So, as an example, he just remained silent. He wanted to reciprocate the loving exchange, but he couldn't even do that. Because Parvati would have gotten more reactive. So he was thinking about the example to mankind and Parvati. So he was grave and silent. But that's an example that we all need to imbibe. But most of all, the words of Haridas Thakur should echo in our ears and resound in our hearts, that if difficulties befall me, if ordeals torture me, if this punishment is so intensive that life itself forsakes me, still I will not cease in constant utterance of the holy name of Krishna, which is the most important means of our expressing gratitude and embodying the loyalty which Vritashira was demonstrating in his own life, that dedication to duty, which was so astounding, and his examples were so his instructions were so precious, as he was acting as Indra's guru while inspiring him to kill him, that aroused the questions in the heart of Maharaj Parikshit, which inspired Shukadeva Goswami to narrate this whole wonderful pastime of Chitraketa's exclaiming how wonderful it is. There's no ill motive in his heart. There's a loving expression of wonder towards a friend. How wonderful it is that Lord Shiva, in the midst of a great assembly of saints and sages and yogis and rishis, has his wife sitting in his lap. And it was a wonderful situation that Lord Shiva, in such an awkward situation, remained completely grave and equipoised. And thus illustrated in his own life, in his own example, how he is sober. An example which we are to follow. Not in his smoking marijuana or drinking the ocean of poison, but the example to follow is contained in the instructions of the great souls. Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions?
During this verse, Prabhupada explained that there was no offense on the part of Chitraketa Maharaj, he was just expressing one. But in the forthcoming verses, we see that Prabhupada says that Chitraketa was trying to impress upon Lord Shiva that you are a Shrestha, you are a leader, you shouldn't be behaving in such a way. And that was offense on his part because he shouldn't have done that. So how to understand the different combination? Sometimes it appears that
no, Srila Prabhupada is talking about two different aspects of this pastime. The initial expressing wonder in a loving reciprocation was not offensive. But when he was trying to instruct him that you shouldn't act like this, see, that was the second part. Offense crept in after the initial opening of the pastime. An offense entered afterwards. So Prabhupada is talking about the different aspects between the first expression of wonder and the second giving instruction to that great soul, Lord Shiva, which was a major breach of etiquette. So Srila Prabhupada is commenting about different aspects of the Leela. One was not offensive, the other you could say was. And as the discussion went in class yesterday, that how is it that such a great leader could act in such a way? It's interesting and important to understand that even in Gaura Lila, we have Lord Gauranga, who is so pakka in his following of the rules and regulations, and then you have Lord Nityananda. And there is, in Vaishnavism, such a thing as avadutas. Those who have a major disregard for the rules and regulations. But they also have a disregard for social distinctions, discrimination, bodily identification. And most of all, an avadut must, to qualify for that title, have the ability to arouse ecstatic love for Krishna. But the important thing to know about avadutas, who pop up here and there, very rarely, but they do have a role, because people tend to get very addicted to rules and regulations and think that the rules and regulations themselves are their salvation, which they're not. Krishna's mercy is our salvation. The rules and regulations are helpful in attracting Krishna's mercy. But if we become addicted to the rules and regulations as the source of our redemption, we miss the whole point. So the avadutas help to balance that tendency to take the rules and regulations as all in all, forget the purpose, which is to please Krishna. So when Chetraketu progressed from the initial expression of wonder to actually giving instructions to Lord Shiva, which was not proper, Srila Prabhupada changes his attitude about his words. The first expression of wonder about having him sitting, that was not offensive. But later to give instructions to someone of such superior caliber was. So Srila Prabhupada is commenting on the different dimensions of this pastime. Okay. Thank you very much, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada.
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't even know that. Can you tell me?
So important.
I thought the topic was going to be maybe Nityanas. It's probably in the prison ministry. But the question is, now you're describing Haridas Thakur and he's getting very abused, but what's the limit in tolerating it, knowing this is Krishna teaching me a lesson, or do you just sit here and get abused by someone continuously?
I said, I didn't have a duty of the truth, I didn't have a duty, you know what the part of the truth is, you know. What is the depth of your humility, and how much can you take without just, you know, being untrue to yourself? It's like, he teases, he said, you know, somebody gets you, just turn the other cheek. If you do it artificially, you're just perpetuating abuse. So, until you have such a depth of humility, which is actually going to transform the person's heart by your attitude, then you set boundaries. What's the epitome of having no boundaries? Come over downhill. He's just got everybody walking all over him. That's why we say he's the best devotee.
But, Varshana, if you're just,
the other key term in all this is empowerment. That's why I said the story about Jesus and the apostles. He wanted to emphasize that if you just think about, you know, how sinful you are and what kind of punishment you're getting, it's disempowering. I mean, it's true. We are simple. There is punishment coming. But there's another side, and that's the grace of the Lord. So that's the empowering, activating side. The other side is more like, you know, passive and disempowering. If it's, you know, exclusive, the other side, Krishna's grace.
But if you keep getting the same...
And what's the wonderful nature of the ailment? Blindness. He's also like, we're all blind.
Right.
In various ways. Which also means you got a dark side. We all have a dark side. It's there, it's real. But you want to emphasize the bright side. That's the one you want to cultivate. You got to acknowledge the other because it's there, it's reality. You want to cultivate the bright side.
But if the lessons, if you don't learn the lesson, you keep just, if you keep going places and the names are different, but the lesson is still the same, then how do you... But if you can't take the abuse, if that's the lesson, because you...
If you can't take it, it goes for any lesson. If it's too much, then it means Krishna has one or two things in store. You change the situation, or you back off, reinforce yourself with your sadhana and association and everything else, and try again.
Okay.
But, you know, it's up to Krishna. He'll put you in situations that are too much, which means one of two things. Either he'll change it for you, or, you know, you just back off enough and, you know, reinforce yourself enough with sadhana and good association that you can go back into it until you succeed. One of those two things.
Okay. Thank you.
Is it being good to him?
Yeah. I just couldn't talk today. But you know what happened? I was taking the outfit off the hanger, and the hanger fell, and then someone's cup of water spilled, and so they're wearing kind of wet outfits a little bit. Mostly Nityananda. I decided, well, if someone's got to wear it, I tried to dry it, but just a little bit around the bottom. And so I thought, well, I just saw a song, Lord Nityananda Never Gets Angry. So I think,
what?
That's what the song. There was a song.
I can't quite see the, I mean, see the Nanda thing in the chest. Sweet.
What?
I can't see the Nanda thing in the chest.
Really?
Yeah, you're not angry. But it wasn't like that kind of anger.
No, they're in the...
So I abuse it like anything. You're just not loving like Papa's.
Yeah, right.
Looked like with me as much as...
Yeah, right.
Convicted.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.